Hi, everyone. This is Greg Harton, editorial page editor for the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Welcome to Know the News, where we give you a sneak peek into coverage coming up this weekend in the Democrat Gazette.
So ambition has been everything. Finding the right ownership groups, finding the right real estate markets, making sure that the fans are not only there, but they're not fair weather. They're willing to embrace what's being brought in and kind of intertwine it with their own community. That's why USL has been so successful, and it's just continuing to grow.
That's Devin Kerr, who has served as lead broadcast analyst for the United Soccer League's championship level matches since 2018, is co-host of USL All Access on Sirius XM Radio, and is a match analyst for Apple TV's Major League Soccer Season Pass. He's also lead analyst for NCAA Soccer on ESPN. I spoke with Devin recently about the USL after Northwest Arkansas residents learned of plans by an ownership group to build a 5,000-seat multipurpose stadium in Rogers. That stadium is set to become the home field or pitch for men's and women's professional soccer teams in the USL. Those teams are slated to begin play in 2026, the same year the FIFA World Cup will be hosted in 16 cities in the United States, Canada, and Mexico. Needless to say, interest in soccer, or football as much of the world knows it, will be intense. It's not a bad time to launch professional soccer in Northwest Arkansas. This weekend, readers of the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette will learn more about professional soccer's future with reporting by Mike Jones. Mike spoke with one of USL Arkansas's co-founders and representatives of nearby teams who might one day become rivals of the as-yet-unnamed Northwest Arkansas team. Kerr, who is a professional player, former professional player himself, in the United States and overseas, seemed a natural person to talk to about Northwest Arkansas's pending introduction into the world of professional soccer. The USL seems to be just spreading like wildfire. What is it from your experience? What's the environment for the USL in the United States, and kind of what's its place as soccer just grows so much globally?
Would say that the common misconception in this country, and I don't fault Americans for it, is that there is only top division. There is only the number one division, because that's all we know historically. You look at Major League Baseball, NFL, hockey. It's, while there are certainly developmental leagues underneath it, it's not a tiered structure that really paves a way for a community to gather its character and culture around it and embrace it. Now, certainly there are 100% arguments against that, but in the grand scheme of things, that's not the case. So you're basically an NFL fan and nothing else. You're basically an NBA fan and nothing else. And you can kind of follow the trend there. The footballing world is very different. And while there are the massive teams in terms of the structure in the first division and MLS, there is 100% a place for a second, a third, fourth division, and so on in this country. And if you look at the front office, they've done a really good job at USL HQ of cultivating that. So maybe they're not necessarily tackling the number one market in Florida and chasing the Miami department, because whether it has been the Miami Dolphins or the Miami Heat or the Florida Panthers, that's where they've fluctuated to. Don't think it's wrong, but Miami is so big. They've got another team in Miami FC. You can continue to move north. You've got the Tampa Bay Rowdies, which are located in the St. Petersburg area. That is a hotbed of soccer that translates to the early NSL days in the late 70s that saw some of the world's greatest footballers starting to come here and make a name for the sport in this country. And as you continue to peer around around this country, they're trying to mimic what's going on around the globe. And USL over the past couple of seasons have set themselves up in that fashion. So it certainly is a smaller market in the argument of maybe it's not the number one within that state or within that region, but there's still such an interest that has yet to be piqued in so many different areas. If you could pick out a few that stand out at this point in time within the championship, Louisville City certainly has to be one of them. because they've taken a team that has been around for 8 years now, founded in 2015. Yes, they found success early, but every single year they've added a little layer to that. So it's gone from, let's get a team, we're going to play in a baseball stadium, to, okay, we made a conference final. Now what's next? So ambition has been everything. Finding the right ownership groups, finding the right real estate markets, making sure that the fans are not only there, but they're not fair weather. They're willing to embrace what's being brought in and kind of intertwine it with their own community. That's why USL has been so successful, and it's just continuing to grow.
Certainly here in Northwest Arkansas, soccer has grown and with influx over the last several decades of people from Latin America. They have brought their passion for the game to Northwest Arkansas. I would assume that kind of support is just key to what makes a USL presence possible and successful.
100%. The base has to be there at some level, and that can be kind of the mid-range, the adults that have gone through it themselves, and you've just kind of got a community that, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20, 50,000, whatever it may be, that just feels like the sport belongs. What's usually the case is that it's not just that number one comment. There's a secondary portion to the argument, which is going to be that fan base who has the experience, who learned it when they were young, especially my age. I'm 39 years old, so the argument rings really true here. They've now started to have children. So they learned it from their parents, but then they even engross themselves more. And now that third step, you've got children starting to work through the ranks. What's great is that it's not just the recreational level where let's go out and have fun. There's an interest in so many different communities around the country now that moves beyond just the overall enjoyment of the game. For parents listening, for kids, that certainly is the most important thing. But the understanding that there is a possibility that lies beyond what's in their immediate future to impact their lives in such a tremendous way. And what I'm leading into is the professional idea, the idea that you can chase a dream as a child in this country to become a professional soccer player is something that was a pipe dream really just a few short years ago. And yet it's all much too common now. I'm born in 1984. I can remember career day when I was in seventh grade. So that would put me somewhere around the age of 12, I believe. So 1996 or so. I showed up at school wearing a soccer jersey. I was wearing an Italian national team jersey. People said to me, why are you wearing a soccer jersey? But my dream was to be a pro soccer player. That now happens so often. Kids show up not just on career day, but multiple days throughout the week, and they want to represent this sport. And to be able to then tie that into the community is everything. So, you know, it's really, really cool to be in an Arkansas region and look around and go, okay, well, we've got Nashville and MLS, right? We've got Birmingham and USL Championship. But to actually have the ideas that have been passed down for generations and then being able to then grab what's right there within your own community, it's really difficult to put into words unless you've experienced it, because it becomes part of your DNA. And there's such an emotional tie to it all that makes you just want to continue that for generations to come.
So that was really one of my questions about, you know, where do players in the USL come from?
Great question. And the answer that I can give you now is going to be much more diverse than if we were having this conversation 5 or 6 years ago. Now it's really all over, and that you really have to tip the cap again to all of the work that's been done by the front office and all the teams and fans that are involved because of the growth. It is a combination of the lower side where you have, and no disrespect on the lower side, just less experience. You have players that are coming right out of college, and maybe from a scouting stance, they didn't get enough recognition to be drafted in MLS. Okay, but they're good enough to continue professionally. USL goes and scouts them. They figure it out. They bring them in. Maybe it's that same player who actually did get drafted by an MLS team, but unfortunately didn't have the best of preseasons or went through a mini camp and it didn't work out for them. been told that they need to go work on their game and come back to play in Division One. Again, nothing wrong with that. USL Championship has set themselves up so that there is now the ability to actually make a career and go and hone your craft in Division Two to try and achieve, if that's what your goal is, getting back to a first division in the United States in MLS. Again, a couple of years ago, you're talking about a budget and a CBA that did not exist for these players, where they would carry two or three jobs outside of playing. So it was very difficult. Then you get guys that have been in MLS for a couple of years or bounce back and forth between MLS and USL Championship. And then we have the European and Latin American, Central American, the Far East, really wherever now, that because the global reach has become America bound more frequently, there's an understanding that this game isn't just starting off here anymore. That argument was certainly made for a couple of decades, but at the highest level in this country, names that I'm sure Arkansas fans are familiar with, but for those listeners that don't know, guys like Brendan Aronson or Weston McKinney or Christian Pulisic that are in their young 20s and even teenagers in Brendan Aronson's case, these are guys that have shown that in this generation, kids that are in high school right now, that goal is attainable. And so it's made it very popular. So more players are trending in this direction. And again, that rings true for every tier of the soccer pyramid in the United States. But now you see a real influx of talent at just so many different levels. And it makes it more difficult to get into the game for players, which is incredible because competition breeds results and excellence. And so just the overall level of quality, the standard that has been set within this league has grown so dramatically over really the past five seasons.
You mentioned this, kind of referenced this earlier, but Northwest Arkansas has a minor league baseball team for the Kansas City Royals. And the other day I heard somebody kind of compare USL to that. As I understand what you're saying, that it's really not an apples to apples sort of comparison.
No, not fair whatsoever. These teams don't have any ties to any organization within MLS. So what they had to go do, and some teams already had this in place, is they needed to make sure that the developmental aspect wasn't just being put in their laps by an MLS team, but that there was a structure underneath that they could benefit from as well. So teams that are doing well in that argument, Pittsburgh Riverhounds, the Tampa Bay Rowdies, Louisville City, I mentioned before, Sacramento Republic, San Diego Loyal, Orange County. These are all teams both in the Eastern and Western Conference that aren't just a team that you're going to go visit to watch a 90-minute game once or twice a week. They have academies within their community that allows the youth to recognize the path to pro. So you can go at 9 years of age, "Dad, I want to play like that guy who's 23, who played at Indiana or who came through their academy and is now a professional." I would say the key difference is now is the vision in American soccer, not just because of USL Championship and MLS, but really all of the entities tied together, has gone from, "Dad, I want to play on an MLS team," to, "I want to play for my local club," which is where we started this conversation, right? About having that ambition to take all of that energy and diversity within your own community and apply it to the club within your domicile. You go from there, you want to play for that team. And then the ambition can stretch a little further. Maybe it means you jump to an MLS team. Maybe it means that you want to go play in Europe. That's a frequent thing now too. We've had two players from Louisville City sold to Europe in the past 18 months. You've had a player from Orange County sold to Europe in the past 18 months. This is an argument that is starting to happen more and more that creates more opportunities. And more importantly, at the end of the day, people have to recognize that it's great to have a team. It's incredible to provide opportunities for people, but it's a business. And you have to make sure that whether it's the person who's cutting the grass on the field or who's serving the drinks, the coaches, the front office staff selling tickets, and the players, that you're finding a way to make sure that it's not only sustainable, but to carry success for generations, that it's profitable for long tenures. And that's what you're starting to see.
Northwest Arkansas, the USL Arkansas, has announced plans for about a 5,000 seat stadium, and the, as we said, the men's and the women's team. You've been to these different USL locations. Some teams have their own dedicated stadium. Some are using other sports facilities. What do you feel like people here in Northwest Arkansas can expect from having a USL stadium and teams right here in the community? How will that play out in terms of the team's presence within the community, and especially in a community that, you know, in Arkansas, it's all Razorback all the time. You know, University of Arkansas. We do not have a professional sports team to speak of. I mean, we do, like I say, we have the minor league baseball, but the Razorbacks have been more or less our professional sports team. And now we've got the USL coming into Rogers, Arkansas here with a 500,000 people in a 2-county area. What is that going to do in Northwest Arkansas?
I would say the first thing is to make sure that Woo Pig Suey makes its way to the stadium. Can we make that happen? I'm a huge college football fan.
Yeah, so, I did see an argument on social media the other day about, you know, we don't know what the name of this team will be or the colors, and somebody threw out, you know, let's make it the same as the Razorbacks, and of course that launched this whole thing of no, you know, we need a whole different identity. So it's going to be interesting over the next 3 years to see how they develop an idea of what to name this team and how to market this team within the Razorback environment.
Yeah, so I'm with the idea of kind of grasping what's already around you, whether or not you take a ton away from what Arkansas brings from, you know, the college football aspect. I don't necessarily know how much or how little you need, but if it's already successful and people have that nostalgic thought process about it, why not try and tie some of that in? That's first and foremost. In terms of the stadium and the community, look, I think the size is perfect because, and we're taught as an analyst, you're not supposed to say think because you're put in that situation to know. But I think I'm using that terminology because part of me wonders if it could be bigger. But knowing the ownership group and what could be, if you build appropriately within the stadium, then that gives you the ability to expand. So it's kind of like an under-promise and over-deliver, if you will. If you say, I'm going to build 5,000 and you're selling out every single week and there's a demand and tickets, okay, well, let's bump it up to 6,500 or 7,500. And better to start there and create that framework and then go. What you can expect to see, again, the ideas at the USL executive level at headquarters, as well as the owners that they've been bringing in, have gotten so much more diverse. And within that expansion of an argument, they've gone from, we're going to put a soccer team here, to we're going to make this a destination to come and experience a game. And those are two very different things. I am from Omaha, Nebraska, and I moved to South Florida in my middle school years. There used to be a team down here called the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. That was the only team. After that, there was a team called Miami Fusion. Miami Fusion played in MLS. One of the things that they got so dramatically wrong with both of those teams, and there's a lot of different arguments to play in here, but it was the fact that they didn't grasp the local community and the market they were walking into and how to engage those people outside of the 90 minutes or 2 hours really that they were in that stadium to watch the game. Arkansas football doesn't have that problem. You walk down the street and people are regularly representing the program, the school. You see it in diners and you see it in restaurants and you're going to bars and you're going to community engagement activities. It's pep rally type stuff. Those are the things that in order to make sure it's successful, you've got to get right. That certainly comes from results on the field. We get that. But again, I use the word passion. You can talk about culture, emotion. To intertwine all of that together, you've got to find a way to make it fun too, because not every mom and dad that's got a four-year-old kid who wants to go to a game are going to want to attend that game, right? So how do you make sure, if the kid's interested about what's going on the field, are the parents interested off the field? Flip it. What if the parents are super excited to go support this, and maybe it's not the young girl or boy's cup of tea to go and do this? Can you still make it an engageable activity and enjoyable for that young person while the parents get to experience it? You get shops, you get hotels. Again, you want to make it a destination, certainly within the community. But if rival fans are coming in, I have people that call me all the time and ask me, hey, what are the best places to go visit for an away game, right? Fans have now made it an idea that this is where they're going to vacation. That's a common occurrence in Europe, because you jump on a train or jump in your car, and you know, their countries are the size of states. It's like Georgia, right? Or Arkansas. It's much easier to commute. But there are fans in Phoenix and Louisville and Pittsburgh and Oakland who are now saying, wow, we're playing, Oakland Roots are playing FC Tulsa. I've always wondered what Tulsa is like. Hey, Devin, what's cool to go on at FC Tulsa, not just at the game? What are the cool hotels? What are the fun activities? So you get an ownership group that is partially spearheaded by Warren Smith. He above anyone is going to know how to do that, because he's also a part of the group that's going into New Orleans. He founded San Diego Loyal. They were the team I just mentioned that played Borussia Dortmund last night. They're sitting fifth in the Western Conference, success every year. Sacramento Republic. These are all teams that, you know, two out of those four, two yet to play, are not just places where people want to go and watch a game. It's where you want to go and find a way to have fun with your family. And then you can make the argument on the backside of, okay, let's get other events coming in. What sporting events can we fit into our stadium? Do you want fairs in here? Are we going to get concerts? Again, gone are the days of just let's go play a 90-minute soccer match. Now it's let's figure out the way to make sure that we harness this community, take all that energy, and make an enjoyable experience for everyone.
You mentioned rivalries. When you take a look at the USL Championship League's roster of teams, what do you think might make for some natural rivalries here in Northwest Arkansas?
My initial response, based upon geographic location, would probably be one of three, really. It's probably going to be Memphis, 901 FC, FC Tulsa, or OKC Energy FC. Now, OKC Energy FC hasn't played for a couple of years, and rumor is they're coming back. But those three geographically are pretty close, so you would think you could lean on those. What I'm wondering is, because of the ambition overall, if it could stretch a little bit further in the overall argument. For instance, Des Moines. Des Moines is a team that has similar ambitions to the Arkansas group. It's called USL to Iowa right now. Des Moines Menace is a team that stretches into the pantheons of U.S. soccer. Men from the age of 14, young men from the age of 14 all the way through 25, 26 have had an opportunity to experience it. And it used to be called PDL. Now it's called USL League 2. I played in PDL. It stood for Professional Development League. Now it is still a semi-professional league. It's considered the fourth tier. But that is a group that, although a little bit further away for sure, I get it, it's Iowa, but it's not super crazy to think how far it is. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, if I'm getting my math right, once you jumped over, that's a straight shot up 35, I believe.
Yeah, a lot of Arkansans went up to Des Moines this past basketball season for the first round of the NCAA. About 6 hours.
Yeah, so again, like, 6 hours it's not a horrific drive. You can certainly do it in one day, but again, if you get it right between these two communities, you wake up on a Saturday morning, you grab the family, you drive across, you go 6 hours, maybe you stop along the way and find a cool spot in Missouri, Kansas City, wherever it may be. Go visit my hometown in Omaha, you know, have a good lunch, and then go experience the game. You get done with the game, you go to bed, you wake up, experience the local culture and breakfast, and you come back home. That's something that I could see that could certainly turn into a nice little rivalry in the future. Also, with the understanding that I'm very much of the belief that it has to be organic. And to just look around and go, well, they're close to us. So, you know, let's say that they're 60 miles. Let's say that they're 250 miles. Just the proximity isn't going to be enough. So I like the idea of two teams that are trying to kind of fight the same path, coming in at the same time. Yes, geographically, they're right there. But the new kids on the block, they want to make a name for themselves. You schedule them early, you get a little bit of thunder playing into one of those fixtures, all of a sudden you've got yourself a recipe for a nice, nice rivalry that could last for some time.
Yeah, gotta play a few games before that really takes root, though.
Bingo.
Well, Devin Kerr, I appreciate so much you spending time with us. Best to you as you continue to provide analysis for fans of the sport. And I expect that hopefully within just a few years, we will be seeing you here in Northwest Arkansas.
You guys open those doors. You rest assured I'll be there.
Don't forget to check out additional coverage about the future of USL in Northwest Arkansas in this weekend's Democrat Gazette. You'll also find other coverage. For example, in Fayetteville, the City Council will consider spending up to $310,000 from taxpayers over 3 years to support a downtown organization that's designed to advocate for downtown business owners, put on events, and help draft a strategic plan for the downtown Fayetteville area. Stacy Ryburn is going to provide some details on that. He's also going to follow up on some earlier reporting about a $200,000 renovation of basketball courts at Fayetteville's Walker Park and a resolution of a small controversy over including a brand name in a mural that project involves. Ron Wood will tell us about how regional planners are going after $50 million in federal funding to help with development of more of the Springdale Northern Bypass and the major overhaul plan to make Highway 112 a more robust north-south corridor. In Sebastian County and the city of Alma in Crawford County, they're getting ready to ask voters to reauthorize separate sales taxes. Millions of dollars in the years ahead are at stake, and River Valley reporter Thomas Sacente will tell us more about that. He will also tell us about a plan at the University of Arkansas at Fort Smith for the UAFS Foundation, and it's the school's Center for Economic Development, launching a $200,000 community investment fund in early 2024. The money will be used to help small business owners who face barriers to accessing capital markets and the networks they need to succeed. And Sunday in What's Up, check out what the Mean Girls are up to. In an indie production of Heathers, meet some of the new cats that will be calling Turpentine Creek in Eureka Springs home. Find out what's new with trout fishing in America as they get ready to celebrate 100 years of the Mount Sequoia retreat and play along with a new exhibit at the Rogers Historical Museum. All that and more is in this weekend's weekly arts and entertainment magazine. For now, that's all for this edition of Know the News. We appreciate you listening and reading. I'm Greg Harton, and until next time, so long.